Welcome to Optimize Your Retirement, presented by Higher Ground Financial Group. This is the radio show and podcast dedicated to helping you navigate common financial challenges on the path to a successful retirement. Tax attorney Daniel Rasby and his father Raz have a passion for guiding people towards financial freedom by helping individuals understand and reduce the three biggest retirement killers: risk, fees, and taxes. Now, let's begin. Here are your hosts, Daniel and Raz.
Welcome back to RiskFeesTaxes.com, where we can come and talk to you about information you might not be getting other places. I'm Imran Rasby. This is Daniel Rasby. He's a tax attorney. Hello. And we work together, father-son team, and we love working together because we bring different generational thoughts to the same boat. And we want people to retire with more information, less stress, and really some strategies that they may not be getting other places.
And it all boils down to those three biggest killers in retirement: risk, fees, and taxes. If you get rid of those, everything else gets better. Risk, fees, taxes. And we talk about with risk, there's a lot of risk in the market. Many of our clients, when they first come to us, have all their money in the market. And people tell you, diversify. That's going to save you. Diversify.
Well, there's two kinds of diversification. You don't diversify in the same place, right?
Right. So I should have different sectors in the stock market. Would that help me?
No, because you're still in the stock market. Stock market hits, you're going to go down. So there's two types. There's opinion-based assets, and there's contract-based assets. Opinion-based assets are based on somebody else's opinion.
But that's like all the assets, right? My stock accounts, opinion-based asset. My house is based on somebody else's opinion. My gold and silver, that's based on somebody else's
opinion. Crypto is somebody else's opinion.
So all the assets are opinion-based assets, right?
There are plenty of contract-based assets. I mean, think about this. Your money in the bank and a CD, cash. You know, you have $100,000 in the bank. You don't want to go to the bank and the teller says, "Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Rasby, Trump tweeted today, so now you only have $50,000. No, I have $100,000. That's a contract. So there's contracts, the CDs, and there's treasuries, there's bonds. If you hold them to a maturity, it's a contract. Rental contracts, rental properties, and we'll talk about rental in a little bit, but rental properties can be both. The value of the rental property could be opinion-based, but the actual contract, the rents, the mortgage, the property manager, all those are contracts, and you can manage those. So if you have diversified properly, you can take advantage of the different taxes and also not be subject to somebody else's whims.
And other types of contract-based assets would be insurance products like life insurance or annuities. Those would be contract assets. So anything with a bank, a treasury, a rental income, potentially, those are contracts. You want diversity between opinion and contract-based assets. And one of those areas is real estate.
Yeah. So we hear this all the time on the radio. We hear people say, we can now take your 401k and convert it into a self-directed IRA and buy real estate, because real estate's great. You know, it's a contract-based asset. You can buy real estate inside your IRA, which was, basically all opinion-based.
And that's a terrible strategy. Please, please do not do this. Do not buy real estate inside of your IRA. It's almost always the worst thing you can do with that money.
Why is it so bad? I mean, you don't get the tax benefits?
No, you don't get any of the tax benefits. You have tax deferral, but that you already had that in the IRA.
So what they're selling is that all this growth in the rental property is all going to be tax deferred to pay later.
You're going to have to pay taxes on it. And the income from a rental property, if you have it set up right in a normal property that's very well capitalized and all that, you can have tax-free income because of something called depreciation. Much of that income that you get is tax-free because you can deduct part of the value of that property every year. You can't do that if it's inside of an IRA. We love real estate. Many of our clients have a lot of money in real estate, even in retirement. It's a really good hedge against inflation because you can raise rents even as your mortgage stays the same.
Yep.
It's a really good hedge just against market crashing because, rents still come in even when the market's crashing. But don't have it inside the IRA. What if you need a new roof on the house? You can't put more money into it other than $7,000 or $8,000 a year, but the roof is more expensive. So you have to borrow, and you borrow at a higher interest rate because very few banks lend to an IRA. It's just a mess. But there's even something that's even worse. We are working with a client that's when he first came to us, he had a bunch of money in self-directed IRAs that was holding real estate, and he's realizing when the required distributions come, the IRS is going to force him to sell those properties because the income that is generated by the property is not enough to even pay 1 year of required distribution. So he's going to be forced to sell the property just to raise the cash.
So he had a great idea. I'll just sell it to myself. No, you can't do that. Well, how about I just sell it to my son? No, you can't do that.
Nope. So it's going to be a third party, unrelated transaction, because otherwise the IRS is going to come back and penalize you. So it's very important to extricate yourself safely and carefully from those rental properties if you have them inside of self-directed IRAs. But what if you don't? What if you're just getting started in the idea of real estate and you were going to do that, but now you heard us and now you're not going to do that with your IRA. You'll use the IRA for the annuity or for the stocks and you know it, all those different things. But you still have other money that you might put into a rental property. So how do you know if you're getting a good one? What should you look for? What are some pitfalls to avoid?
We are always of the opinion that pressure test everything. Make sure that it works in the worst of environments, because if it works in the worst of environments, then it'll work in the best of environments, right? So what we mean by that is it going to work with a mortgage, with a property manager, with the taxes and HOA and everything else? Is it going to work? And also, what are the restrictions of the HOA? Can you do short-term rentals? If you can't, that kind of puts a limit on what you can make. So
you like short-term rentals better than long-term rentals?
I think so. I like short-term rentals for a couple of reasons. One is you don't have to worry about evictions. You know, they prepay, they come in, they leave, and you got somebody, the property manager and cleaning company, looking into the property every time somebody leaves. If there's some damage, if there's some mold, that gets found out early rather than having, you know, $100,000 worth of damage after 2 years.
So somebody called, I agree that profitability can project to be really, really good, but, you know, what about the occupancy? You know, if there's very low occupancy, can that make a difference?
It can, but if you're making three or four times as much renting it to short-term than you are long-term, but what if it's only renting 50% of the time? You're still making more money. Okay, so there's lots of different options. And also, you know, it just, you have more control over it, but there is more work. We don't want you to be a landlord in retirement. We want you to get a good property manager. So with a good property manager, with the mortgage, with all this stuff, if it still works as profitable, then it's a good property.
So are you a property manager?
No, I'm not a property manager. I don't want to be a property manager.
So we'll help you find a good property manager in your area, in the area where the house is. And
yeah, you know, I can do plumbing. You know, when I first started, I owned an ice cream store and we did the plumbing for the ice cream store ourselves because we were poor. Okay. But now if I have a plumbing problem, I don't get underneath the sink and do the problem. I don't rip out a pipe. I could do it, but I don't want to do it. I'd rather pay somebody else to do it. My time is better spent doing other things.
So always hire a professional. And again, as you said, the numbers have to work. If the numbers can work well with paying a manager, well, they would also work even better without paying a manager. So if you wanted to manage it yourself, you could, but you need it to be profitable enough that you can afford to do those things, because you don't want, especially in retirement, you don't want to be forced to go and spend all that time managing the property. Then we had a question. Somebody, the last time we talked about this, somebody responded and said, well, you know, my opinion is, and this is what a lot of, you know, people are saying, that the Airbnb market is going to crash because the economy is in pretty bad shape. We're expecting a recession. And so people aren't going to go on vacation anymore. And so you won't be rented at all in the Airbnbs. So what do you have to say to that? What do you think about that?
I think we as Americans are spoiled. We can't pay our mortgage. We're still going to go on vacation.
So people will always be going on vacation. And the wealthy people are definitely always going to go on vacation. So if you have a higher end Airbnb, not a just really tiny one, but a one in a good location that's got higher end furniture, maybe it's in a more luxury area, those are going to be rented anyway, because again, you're charging more for it and the wealthier clients are going to rent it anyway.
Yeah. Places like DC area, you know, DC suburbs, Maryland, Virginia, Northern Virginia, that's one of the most visited places in the world. So even if it's not a resort town, you can probably still go rent it, because people have to come visit. They have to go to government business. They have to do other things. There's also traveling nurses that can do it. So those are all good things. And also when you do rental properties, there's a couple of things that sometimes people overlook. Something called cost seg. You can do a cost seg study. And what is a cost seg then?
Cost seg is when you find out certain portion of this property that you are telling the IRS is going to lose value much faster.
So you can't do this yourself. You need to get a cost seg engineer, right?
Yeah, you there are third parties that will do those analysis, and we'll help you organize all that together and make sure it's reported correctly on your tax return. There are a lot of people talking about cost seg, and many of them are not following all the steps, because if you do the cost seg and then you report it incorrectly on the return, you actually lose all of that benefit. And it's important also to use it only when it's actually going to help you in other areas on the tax return. But the way it works is normally with a property, you can depreciate it over 24 years or 27 years or 34 years, depending on the type of property. But if you can say, look, the carpets are going to wear out faster, the paint's going to wear out faster, the carport, you know, certain pieces of the property are going to wear out faster, you can depreciate them more quickly over maybe 10 or 7 or 15 years rather than a much longer time. And if it's under a certain number of years, you can do bonus depreciation. You can actually take all the years at once. And that's what Raz is referring to, where you can take a huge deduction all at once. The problem is, what do you do with that deduction? Because there are many companies that will do that. They'll package it all up. They'll give you this deduction and say, here you go. You got a negative K-1 distribution from your property that's showing negative $200,000 this year from your property. Well, but if you can't deduct that against your other income, that's a problem. And most people do not qualify to be able to take it against their other income.
That's a big problem because, you know, I'm not a tax attorney. Daniel is. So I'm always saying, Daniel, how about this? He said, no, you can't do that. Daniel, what about this? This person on TikTok said this. No, that's kind of illegal. Okay. So you need a real professional that actually knows what they're doing. And just because you got a tax deduction doesn't mean you can take it. It has to go against your AGI, only 30% of your AGI, I think, in some cases.
Even less. If you are making over $250,000, you can't deduct anything from rental property losses on your W-2 income unless you can find a way to either make it an active loss, not a passive loss, which is hard to do, but it is possible. We have many clients that have done it. And Airbnb is actually a little better suited for that than the long-term rentals. But the other way is if you're retired and this is the only income, then you can certainly make it active that way. You can say you spend a certain amount of time every year doing the rental property business, but you need to prove it. You need to be able to log it. And yes, if it's done properly, you can take these massive deductions, which can offset Roth conversions and so on. So there are some really good benefits. Cost segregation is not a fraud. It's not a hoax. It is a real thing. But you got to make sure you do it correctly and then have a tax attorney wrap it up all together. Don't just buy a cost seg analysis from somebody. You need to make sure it's reported correctly on the tax return, and don't bother to do it unless you can actually use a deduction. So,
yeah. Isn't there something else on the tax return where you can be a real estate professional? Do you have to have a license and stuff to do that?
No, you don't have to have a license to be a real estate professional, but you do have to work a certain number of hours. You have to be doing that more than 50% of your time. You have to be working more than 750 hours every year in the business. Both of those, not just one of those, but both of those have to be true. And so you have to log that, but it is possible. And many of our clients do qualify for that. And especially if you have one spouse that's working, another spouse is staying at home, that could be the primary occupation. There's different ways to set that up. So go to our website and we'll talk to you about the best way to minimize your taxes with real estate or in other areas. And our website is riskfeestaxes.com. Again, that's riskfeestaxes.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Optimize Your Retirement. To take the next step and receive personalized guidance tailored to your specific financial situation, schedule your free call with Daniel and Raz from Higher Ground Financial Group. Visit riskfeestaxes.com. That's riskfeestaxes.com. Or call 888-263-HGFG. That's 888-263-4434. We look forward to hearing from you.
Any examples used are for illustrative purposes only and do not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and may not be suitable for all investors. It is not intended to predict the performance of any specific investment and is not a solicitation or recommendation of any investment strategy. Higher Ground Financial Group does not provide securities investment advice. No part of this program should be construed as advice to buy, hold, or sell any security. Any mention of securities is incidental and for educational purposes only. Legal and tax advice provided through Higher Ground Legal Incorporated, pursuant to signed retainer agreement, if applicable.